quick little note I was given to remind me that if it's hot like today, next week, we're going to have some tents outside. So if you're thinking, oh, I'd love to come, but I can't sit out in the sun, then don't sit out in the sun. Sit in one of the tents that we're going to have. That's one of the things that that Daryl arranged for us. So thank you for that. Let me see if I can touch on something that I'm going to guess is common experience for most of us. You ever found yourself on schedule somewhere? And now we're headed into the summer, right? Summer's supposed to be our downtime. But have you found yourself at one time or another, you're looking at your schedule, you're looking at the things you want to do, and you just need to press pause for a minute. You just need to kind of maybe exhale and go, okay, wait. Oh, I feel like I've been running for weeks. You ever find yourself saying that, even to yourself? Man, I just feel like it's been go. I just need to press pause and inhale. I need to go grab a coffee and sit on the deck for a little bit. Even just for a few minutes this morning before I get started. Yes, no, some of us? Yeah, more people on this side, not so much you guys over here. I'll get to you. Wake up a little bit. Okay, how about this? How about, have you ever watched a movie and at some point you have to pause and talk to the people that you're sitting watching a movie with? Go, hold on a sec. Who's that character? You ever done that? We watched, last night we were watching Murder on the Orient Express. I don't know how many of you have seen it, but there's enough characters that two times we had to stop and go, okay, whoa, who is she again? Right? You got to pause to stop so that you've collected the information so you understand the activity. Right? You've had that feeling before. By the way, for Father's Day this weekend, this has nothing to do with the sermon, I got to tell you this. We went out Friday night to see The Incredibles 2. Whoo, is that fun. Have you seen it? Anybody yet? Go see the movie. Somebody, let's do a church thing. Let's go buy like 60 tickets and go see it. That is a fun movie. That's a lot of fun. Bunny trail. Anyway, this idea of sometimes you just got to press pause and you got to collect the information so that you understand the activity. This morning is a press pause moment because this church is active and busy. I mean, our bulletin is up to 4 pages long now, right? All kinds of stuff going on. Our website, we're constantly trying to update it. This church is buzzing with activity, and the danger is sometimes that when churches get busy with activity, we lose sight of what we're doing, like why we're doing it. And so this morning I wanted to press pause before we get into the summer ministry plans are already being made in for the fall now and sorting that out. And I wanted us as a church body to just stop for a second because I reckon, where's our PowerPoint thing? Rhonda, you were the last one with it. And now she's left. She took it home. Well, this is not helpful. Click. Anyway, here's the first thing I want. Yes, Sonia, I'm going to have to ask you to lean on this. Here's the first thing I wanted to recognize this morning. Go ahead, Pistis. I know you got a life of your own. Outside of Wyoming Baptist Church ministry stuff, you got your own life. Congratulations, you guys got your own life. Hey, you two, pay attention up here. They got their own life, and that's really exciting. But you're here right now. And you know, Steve, you got your own thing going on. Florence, you got your own life story going on. And every single one of us has got our own stuff going on. And I'm not negating that. And I'm not making little of that. Whatever is impacting your life, it's important to you. And I'm not saying it's not. If you go back over the sermons since like January, you'll find most of the things that we touch on in our sermons touches on your individual journey in faith. But here's another thing that is also true at the same time, and it's not in conflict, and it's this. We together have a life. And it doesn't cause conflict. It's not as opposed to, because the biblical description of us is, we are one body. And a body has a purpose, and a body has a life, right? And we together as Wyoming Baptist Church have a purpose and a life that is similar to, but not identical to, a church down the street or a church in the next town or a church somewhere else. And so God calls us to a missional purpose, which I would say is very similar to every Christian church. And then he calls us to an outworking of that purpose, which could look very different from one church to the next. So if I were to say to you something, if I were to ask a question, what is our collective purpose? What types of things come to mind for you when I say, what is the reason and what is the purpose and what is the central core of our body? What is it? Shout something out. Anybody over here? We're here for support, right? You're talking about for one another. Lift one. How many of you, I like that, how many of you have felt at one time or another go back a week, a month, 6 years, 10 years, how many of one time or another have felt, man, I'm so glad I belong to the church that supported me when my knees were not strong enough to do it? Yeah, we're here for support. That's right. Give me another word. Why are we one body? For what other reason? Fellowship. We celebrate with one another. We put a pig on a post and cook it up and eat it. That's what we do. And it's good and it's fun. It's going to be a lot of fun doing that. We're here to serve. Absolutely. We're here to serve one another. We've already touched on that. Who else are we here to serve? Say it. Let me hear you. We're here to serve the Lord. You're absolutely right. I'm the word I've got in mind is something a little bit more right next door, right tangible to me. Who else are we here to serve? The people outside our walls of faith who don't think like us. The church, we are here as a people to serve and care for others who do not think like us, who disagree with us, and might even challenge our measure of faith. I'd have no problem sitting with you and showing you several places through Scripture that says we're here for that. Absolutely. I'm going to say it this way. We have a purpose as a body, and I'm going to get right down to the kind of the base of it. We'll build back up. Go ahead with this. Our purpose is this. The reason we exist as a body in the church is so that the God of all creation would receive recognition. We say glory. We use the word glory. That the God of all creation would receive glory as more and more people become fully devoted followers of the gospel of Jesus Christ. That is, when you have all the conversations and you get down to the very bottom of it, that's why we exist. That is the purpose and place and mission of the church, so long as we tarry here until he comes back, is that God, our God gets the glory as more and more people become fully devoted followers of Christ. I had a guy come one time to a church leadership conference, and he just made it so simple. It was so beautiful. He drew this great big wide funnel, and he said at the top of the funnel, he had a picture of a person. He said, for this person, God is pretty much irrelevant. Either they disagree with Christian faith, or they say they're Christian, but there's no impact in their life, whatever. That person, God is not central. The gospel of Jesus Christ is not the primary purpose for their life. And he said, our purpose as the church is to get them inside the funnel, because at the bottom of the funnel is a person who is absolutely, without reservation, devoted to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Anything Jesus wants, he gets in this person's life. And he said, the reason for the church is to move people into and through the funnel. And I went, well, yeah, that's simple. Right? Except the funnel is so convoluted and what's the next step? How do we do that? But that's it. That's why we exist. Our body, go ahead. Our body is a body. It's an organism. It's a living, breathing organism, you and I. You don't take a bunch of live elements and put them together and create something dead, do you? No, you take live elements of diverse nature, you put them together, you still have something that's alive. So the church is an organism. It has organizational qualities to it. But we're a living, breathing organism, and the reason we're here is to see people move through the funnel from I don't care about God to God is everything, and I've been redeemed by him. That's why we exist as a church. So what I want to do this morning, real quickly, is I want to just press pause and catch you up on some of what's happening in the church that all relates back to that. So let me take a quick snapshot at life in the church at Wyoming Baptist Church. The first one is this. A long time ago, a number of us as members, we got a committee together. We said, it's time for us to rework our governance model. Isn't that exciting? You all got up in your chair. Church governance. Let's talk for the next 6 hours about church governance. Yeah, me too. I'm like, oh, you're kidding. Get me out of the room, right? I don't really care a whole lot. And I'm guessing most of us here don't really care a whole lot. But it has bearing on how we operate as a church. This is our guide. I'm going to say this carefully. I'm not looking to pick a fight here this morning. This is our guide for how we support one another and have fellowship with one another and serve with one another. This is our guide. And this is all that the church needs to be the church, is the Word of God. As we sit with one another and go, wait, I don't know, I see this, but I'm not sure I understand it. Can you help me with that? The Word of God is all we need to be the church. However, we maintain two identities in this world. We are the body of Christ, accountable to God the Father for how we do life together. We are also, by our own choice, a registered charity with the Government of Canada. And the Government of Canada sets the rules on how we operate as a registered charity. Now, we know that right now, culturally and in our government, there's a lot of things that are kind of going sideways, and we look at it and we go, ugh. We feel threatened. Do we feel threatened? Have you watched the news in the last 6 months and at one time or another felt threatened by what's going on? Right? What if they change this law? What if they change that law? Look, if the government of Canada set out a whole new set of rules for charitable organizations that we could not live with, is that going to threaten us as the church? No. Because we could simply say, fine, we don't want to be a registered charity. And my guess is, would be that our givings would probably drop. Because you'd give your money where you could get receipted for it. And I'd have to go get a second job in order to support my family. But we would still be the church, wouldn't we? There's nothing that the government of Canada or any other government can do to us that threatens who we are in our essence. But in the meantime, we are a registered charity, and so they set some rules, and we decide whether or not we can live within that framework. And so our governance model is partly to do with that. Tomorrow night, our deacons and the governance committee are going to meet together to look at take a final look at the draft that committee has come up with. I'm going to say it now. I'm sure you're going to hear me say it again. This committee has done phenomenal work. There was a stretch of time over the last year and a half where they were meeting every week, Tim, every single week. There was a stretch of time in there. Hours and hours and hours and hours of time. So when we start to roll this out to the congregation, and for those of you who are interested, you start to read through it, first of all, I'm going to tell you right now, it's a very different document than where we've come from. There's a lot of things that are new for us, new language. This committee has done miles and miles of legwork. And so kudos to them for the work that they've done. A change is coming for the way that we govern ourselves, and it's good because the changes all help us meet our ultimate goal. Tell me again, what's our ultimate goal? What's the reason we're here for? That God would get glory because people, what? Become committed followers. Everything else is up for grabs. Everything else is up to be adapted, but that's our core purpose. And the changes that are coming in this new governance model will help us accomplish those purposes. So that's one. The other thing, real quickly, is facility changes. Has anybody walked down to the library recently? Because when you got there, you realized you missed it. The library's now here. So if you, either through this door, if you want to go out through here, this is our library. We're in the midst of transforming what was our library into a fellowship space that's going to be primarily focused on youth ministry, what Daryl's doing, but it's going to be, we're going to name it pretty much a multi-purpose room. So it's not going to be, you know, youth space as in it can't be used for anything else, but we've got some plans together for a really cool looking room, and I hope the reveal is, we're aiming for like first week of August, that we invite and say, come on and take a look at this new space. So it's a facility change. It's not, no one's losing sleep over this, but it's something that's kind of exciting. You want to see that. We got staffing changes. We have recently had some staffing changes. We will, in the near future, have some staffing changes. And through to the end of the year, things are happening with our staffing changes. If you were unaware, Miriam is going to be retiring about the end of August. She's going to have some time overlap with a new person to help train them. Miriam's been doing this 13 years. Does that sound about right, I think? About 13 years, Miriam has been our office administrator. I don't think you can come up with a question, walk in that room, that she wouldn't know, right? She's wonderful at what she does, and she said to me, now's the time. And I said, don't go. I said, why are you going? Why has something happened? She said, no, this is good. This is all good. She said, there's no heartache, she said, now's the right time for me to go. She said, if I don't put a date on the calendar, I'm never leaving. But she said, now's the time that someone else needs to come and take this chair and take the ball further down the field. That's a big change for us, because whoever comes into that spot's going to have to get used to it and they're going to tweak that job and do it like they want to do it, right? So transition's not always easy. The other thing I want to note about our staffing changes is we had two brand new summer interns. Did you see them here this morning? You saw them? All right, now I'm going to really put you on the spot. Did you walk up to them and say, hi, welcome? Two new summer interns that have limited interaction with us. Amy Knapp, Herman's daughter, has been here several times before. Doesn't really have a deep-rooted interaction with us as people. And Leah White, who has no interaction with us previously, they're going to be taking over the Junior Church Ministry through July and August. They're going to be helping with some games next week at the Pig Roast. They're going to help Rhonda with our summer camp stuff. They're going to do a couple of community events for kids, a water bomb day or something. I'm really excited about the opportunity we have for children's ministry this summer to do some neat things with these two girls. They're phenomenal workers. It's been great when I say, hey, can you put this tag there for me? And like it's done before I'm ready for the next. So, but here's what I want to put to you as a church. I don't really expect our summer interns to come up to you and say, hi, this is who I am. What I do want is for us as a church to approach them and make sure that they know in the midst of work here, they are welcome here, they're valued here, and they're loved here. Okay? Can I put that on your shoulders as a church? Say, make sure these girls know at the end of the summer, regardless of what their work was, I want to be able to ask them at the end of the summer, what was your experience like? And I want them to say, can I come back next year? Because this was such a cool church. That's what I want for them. And I can do as much as I can to make that happen, but if I'm the only one doing it, there's no way we'll accomplish that. So I want to throw that on you and ask, make sure these girls know that they are loved and they are valued here. We got some staffing changes that are happening. God says to his people in Isaiah chapter 43, he's talking to them through the prophet about the fact that they've been pulled into Babylon, and he's reminding them that that's not a forever thing. I'm going to rescue you, I'm going to pull you back out. And at one point in this, through the prophet, he says to them, look, I'm doing something new. I'm doing something that I've never done before. So be ready, I'm going to do something new. I'm convinced of this. I don't consider myself as prophetic as Johnny. But I'm convinced of this. In the next generation of the church, 20 to 30 years, God will do something that none of us here have ever seen before. I'm convinced of it because we're already seeing it. New forms of the church happening in our culture in North America. But God's doing something in the Middle East and in China that no one can account for. He's never done before. And I think we're going to see it in our lifetime. I think the church that most of us grew up with, it's not going to die, but God will do something new that we've never seen before, and I think it's already starting to happen. Ministry plans, feedback. So we got facility changes, staffing changes. In discipleship, a number of you filled out forms. We had forms a few months ago, men's and women's ministry. Give us your feedback. What kind of things would you be interested in? And some of you are thinking, I filled that out 3 months ago. They must have forgotten. We've not forgotten. We've collected that information, and we're thinking about some really exciting plans for women's ministries and for men's ministries in this fall. So even if you didn't fill out one of those forms, but you're inquiring, you're wondering what's going to happen with women's ministries, talk to Heather about it. She's got the lead on that. She and Gail are going to work together on that, so you can talk to them as they sort that out. And I'm working through some of the men's ministry plans with our deacons. We got a couple of really cool ideas this morning. I found out, I didn't know this, Herman, you're a paddler? You have a kayak? Yeah, how many are paddlers in the room? All right. Well, as of right now, we have a paddling ministry. We're going to figure that out. I don't know what it looks like, but the idea of just being out on the water with people, and yeah, that's kind of fun. So we got some ideas for the fall that's going to be really kind of cool. When I talk about the word discipleship, the first thing that comes to mind for most of us, when I say discipleship, when you think of a discipleship environment or a discipleship event, what's the first thing you think of? Say it, quick. Discipleship is a Bible study? Is that what I heard from somebody? Yeah. Yes, it is. But discipling one another in our faith is so much broader than that. There are intimate ties between discipleship, that is growing in my faith, and fellowship, how I interact with others. There are intimate ties, inseparable ties, between discipleship, growing in my faith, maturing in my faith, and serving together. And so as we think of what it means for you and I to be discipled, for you to be in a different place in your faith a month from now or 6 months from now or a year from now than where you are now, it is not just the study of God's Word. In fact, I pushed back on somebody just yesterday having a conversation. Somebody said to me, we were just talking church stuff, and he said, bottom line, the only thing the church needs to worry about is preaching the word. And I said, I disagree. The church needs to preach the word and be true to the word, but that's not the only thing we need to do. Then we need to step out the door and live what we have just preached. And so I'm going to have to bump into other people to do that, right? Other believers, and we will sharpen one another in our faith, and we will challenge one another, and up against people that don't think like me, so I have an opportunity to do the same and to share my faith. Why do you think that way? Why do you act that way? Why do you have that kind of hope? Because God's proven himself faithful. Despite the number of times that I haven't been, he has been. So I got to tell you a little bit about that, right? A lot of us don't feel we're ready to do that. Discipleship, the growing of my faith, is intimately tied to my fellowship and my serving alongside others. Our fellowship, I've already made mention of this. You know, stuff like this, events like this, stick around, man. It's worthwhile being here. Not just it's going to be good food and fun. It's part of us doing life together. There's another aspect to our fellowship, and I'm gonna go ahead and be willing to poke you about this too. We have this opportunity every Sunday after the service. We all go in there and grab a coffee and a muffin, and we sit down, and you catch up with people, right? How was your week? What's going on? And for most of us, it doesn't cross our mind that somebody did something in order for us to have that. Somebody put coffee on. Somebody got muffins out. Somebody cut up some fruit. Somebody did whatever. And as a church, we get so used to doing that, it doesn't cross our mind that somebody else did this. Otherwise, I wouldn't have this coffee in front of me. And I will just tell you, for the most part, it's been the same person over and over and over and over and over doing it. And some of you know who he is. I don't need to throw his name out there. I'm sure he wouldn't be happy with me doing so. My point is this. The celebration that we get to have in fellowship after the worship service has, for whatever reason, started to land on a very small group of people. And I don't think it should. Bleh, there, I said it. I just threw it right out there. If we enjoy that, if we benefit from that, if you go away from church every week going, I'm glad we had coffee time, because I haven't chatted with that person in a while, can you just keep in your mind that it happened because somebody did something, somebody served for that? And I think you know where I'm going with this. Track down one of the ladies from our fellowship committee and say, you know what, I can do that once a month. I can do that once every 6 weeks. Because right now it's landing on the shoulders of very, very few people. And if we all benefit from it, certainly we can all throw something into it, okay? That's part of us being a fellowship. So there's a participation in that. This church and its evangelism. I'm sure many of you know we're sending a team to Magnetowon this year. They're leaving first week or second week of August on the 6th, 5th? Saturday. Leaving on the 4th on the Saturday to head up to Magnetowon. We are continuing to build a relationship there. We don't, the team's going to go back there and they will know some people by name, but we've only been there 1 year. We haven't built the relationship yet. Our goal is that it would be a long-term thing that we would. And we live in the midst of a time right now when the church, wide, not just Wyoming Baptist Church, but the church is realizing we have a long road to go to build reconciliation with our First Nations people. Right? If you're at all like me, sometimes you hear yourself saying, well, I didn't do those things. I would not have done those things. I wasn't the person responsible. My family wasn't the ones responsible for. I look around this room and I think probably the odds are none of us here had anything to do with the atrocities that have been committed against our First Nations people historically, which doesn't remove from our shoulders the responsibility to be part of the healing. Part of the healing, man. So let's not get in our minds that we have a small team of people, which is a subsection of our missions committee, who are doing a thing. Let's keep in mind that we together, as a body, are commissioning a team to go and start to do some of that work for us. But it's not, this does not land solely on that team or just on our missions committee. Let's do this together. So, what do you mean by that? Pray for that team. Write it down, mark it down, put it in your phone. Give a committed time of prayer for that team. Or approach Steve Salins, who's our team captain for them, and say, hey, listen, can I make a contribution to that team? No idea what the cost is, but can I donate $100 to the purpose of that team? Let's, as a church, support that team because it's part of a much bigger goal that's going to be part of our lifetime in the church so long as we're around. That's building reconciliation with the First Nations. So that's coming up real shortly. If you look out on the missions board, there's a picture of a family called the Huttons. I don't know how many of you have met the Huttons, but we support them through our budget. We provide money to Canadian Baptist Ministries, and that money goes to the Huttons. The Huttons are ministering in Bolivia, and the Huttons are going to be home in August this year. And we're thinking of having a service August 12th. Is that right? They're going to be in this area on August 12th. Now, here's the thing. They cannot be here in the morning. They're in Kingsville or something like that in the morning. And some of us said, well, what if we had an evening? Except, you know how many people show up Sunday evening? About six. Right? One. We have one committed. Absolutely. Here's what we're thinking of doing. Now just take it. Don't. Just stay in your seats. We're actually considering, what if on August 12th we didn't have Sunday morning service? You just stayed home and had breakfast with family and enjoyed the day, and then we all came here in the evening so we could hear what's up with the Huttons and how we can support them. And a lot of you are nodding. Some of you who are thinking, that's it, I'm going to kill him. You're not responding. You're keeping that well to yourself. But that's what we're thinking. Anyway, maybe on August 12th, we just meet in the evening so we can hear from the Huttons. Anyway, and on top of that, we're considering, is it maybe time for us to send another team back to Bolivia? If you have been part of International Missions, and it's a passion for you, if you'd like to go, you need to know right now, our Missions Committee is starting a discussion about what would it take to put a team together for February 2019 to go and minister in Bolivia. If you've not been on a missions trip, but you always thought, oh, maybe I should, you need to poke the Missions Committee and say, tell me about this. I'd love for us to send a team of 8 to 10 people back. I had never been, 2015 when we went, I'd never been on international missions before. And I don't know if I've admitted this to our Missions Committee before. But when the Missions Committee came to me and said, you know, we'd love our pastor to go on this trip, I was like, nope, I have no interest in going on international missions. And I fought that. I put on a polite face and I played along, but internally I was going, I don't want to go to Bolivia. Thank you for that. Don't make me go. And I mean, right up until we were on the plane, and I was just in angst because I did not see that this is where I needed to be. I didn't get it. And I didn't get it until I was in it and I got home and I realized, retrospect, right? Look what God did. You all understand that. You've had that feeling before. You fight them all the way through, and then after it's all done, you go, oh, that's what we were doing. So, if you may not think that Bolivia is your thing, talk to God about it, because he may have some other ideas. This is kind of a real quick snapshot of what's going on in our church right now, but I want to finish up this morning, and I'll do this efficiently as I can, to tell you what God has been poking at me about for a little while. And I have to make a confession to you as your pastor this morning. I haven't been receiving it very graciously. I haven't been cooperating with him about this. So I need to share this with you because I'm the pastor of this church and I have a responsibility to you. So I want to share with you what he's been doing. And he hasn't been bringing me something new that I didn't already know. He's been challenging me that I think I've been dropping the ball. You've heard me say it before, so it's not going to be new information, but here's what's been going on. In April, we had our MLHA meeting here, Middlesex Lampton Huron Association. It's the gathering of churches that we belong to in this geographic region. It's the pastors that I get together for lunch with once a month. It's the other churches that we interact with and associate with. And the MLHA had its annual assembly here at this church. And we invited a guy by the name of Dave Overholt. Go ahead and throw him up there. Dave Overholt is at the Church on the Rock in Hamilton. Dave Overholt has been doing youth ministry for his whole life in ministry. So his heart and his passion and his focus is, in fact, the title of that day, back in April, was Reaching and Keeping the Next Generation in the Church. Now, really quick context. Within the confines of Middlesex Lampton Huron Association, we are one of the churches that other churches look at and go, you guys have got it going on. You got an associate pastor of family ministries, and here's some of the things we hear and we see. Our reputation within the MLHA is that we understand what it takes to reach and keep the next generation in the church. Now, you might internally say, how do they come to think that? It's another day, another conversation. But it was a reminder when he came here that day in April, he made some of these following points. Go ahead with this. First thing he talked about was, is your environment... Now, some of the churches in the MLHA, they're dying. They have no young families, no young people. They don't know what it looks like for them 10 years from now. That's just the state that they're in. And so he was saying these type of things. Listen, is your environment, when you gather as a people, is it spiritually alive? I'm pretty confident about that because what we experience here on Sunday morning in our worship, I don't know if you know this, but when I can hear you. I can hear you and I can see you. And I think we have a spiritually alive environment when we gather. Are we done? No, we're not done. We're not done because, correct me if I'm wrong, we're not the same. Our Sunday morning experience this morning is not the same as it was 5 years ago, is it? For those of you who've been around longer than that, our Sunday morning experience, the atmosphere, the room, the volume, the whole thing, it's not the same as it was 5 years ago, was it? No, it's not. It's different and it's changing. And some of us like it and some of us don't so much like it. I tell you right now, it's always going to change. It's always going to evolve. It's always going to do this. Is it spiritually alive? Is it engaging for the next generation? Is it a place in which young people can actually go, I'm good with it. Yeah, let's go to church, Mom and Dad. I've never been so encouraged. But the time I heard people say to me, 6 months ago, it was a fight to get my kids to come to church, and this morning they got me here. And I'm like, bang! That's what I want to hear over and over again. Is the environment that we create, whether it's a worship service or just a fellowship gathering, is it engaging? And secondly, is it welcoming? Do our young people know that they're valued here? That we love them? That we want them here with us? That's important. Because there's lots of churches right now that are saying, we didn't give that much consideration, and now it's too late because they're gone. And so we fight for that, and I fight for that, and I push this button a lot. And secondly, thirdly, is it empowering? Have we actually taken our church function, the things that we do as a church, and are we planning to hand it off to the next generation and give it to them and say, look, within the confines of, pick one, church fellowship, worship expressions, our discipleship programs, whatever, you pick one. Within this realm, are we actually making plans to hand it off to the next generation and let them do it differently than we did it? That's a massive challenge for churches, and a lot of churches are having a really, really hard time doing it. We are ahead of the game in reference to other churches, but we got work to do. We've got work to do in case of that. Go ahead with the next point. Dave Overholt also made this point. Ultimately, it's not a program that's going to keep young people in your church. I mean, we could look to Pastor Darrell and we could say, man, we're paying you. Come up with the big ideas. Make it happen. And he does, like Mud Bowl, right? It's crazy, stupid, wacky young ideas, and the kids love it. I would not have thought of it. I don't want to do that. But that's his idea, and it works. The stuff that he's doing Friday night, it works. He's connecting with kids. The group of kids, the majority of kids that come here Friday night for youth have no other church connection. So he's creating something that allows an open door for them to be here. But let's be clear, it's not the program that's going to make the difference. It's you and I. It's how we receive young people. It's what we look like when they approach us. Like, do we smile at them? It's pretty much that simple. Do we smile and say, oh man, so happy to see you this morning? And when we say it, do we actually mean it? It's not the program that's going to hold our generation with us. It's the people in the church. And these are the things that Dave Overholt, you can go ahead with the next. These are the things that Dave Overholt was reminding us back in April. He said, here's the thing. The environment wins over your words every time. He said, I know of churches that have statements on the wall about connecting with the young generation, and they don't actually do any of it. So they sat down, they thought it through, they had the conversation, then they came up with the poster, and it's posted there, but he said the environment doesn't state that. And he said, here's the thing about young people today. A lot of young people we look at, they think, well, they're not engaged, they're not interested, they're not connecting with the church. But he said, they know. They are keenly aware of the difference between an environment that's spiritually alive or spiritually dead. They know this. So the environment wins over the things you say every single time. And we need to ask ourselves, what environment are we creating so that the people coming, the generation coming behind us know that we're here for them? And the last one is this. He said, this is a question that young people are asking today. Every conversation comes eventually to this question. Does faith work? So a young person says, you want me to be a Christian? You want me to come to your church? You want me to stay connected with you? Show me that your faith works. Show me that I don't care to know more information. I want to know whether it actually works. When you gather together as a people, does the faith that you proclaim actually shape who you are? Does it work? And when you go home and raise your families and go through the stresses of family, does faith work there too? And when you head into the workplace, and when I go to school next week, is faith going to work for me? That's what young people wanted to know. Now, he did a fantastic presentation that day. And I went into it knowing what the theme of the day was, and I thought to myself, this has kind of been my heartbeat since day one. Since the very first time that I was called to pastoral ministry 11 years ago, it was this question. Does our faith that we together as a church, that we're promoting, does it work for the next generation? My first role in ministry was a pastor of children and family ministries. And I sat with a guy one time and he said, you know, in all the church, you've got the hardest job. I said, I know. I've got the hardest job. I should have the biggest pay. Is there not? I said, why? What do you mean by that? He says, because you're never going to see the fruit of your labor. He says, if you need someone to pat you on the back for the fruit of your labor, you're in the wrong line. He said, here's what's going to happen. In children's ministries and you focus on that, those kids grow up. That's what they do. and they move on. And he said, more than likely, you won't know. You'll probably never hear. Maybe if once in your lifetime, you'll ever hear someone come back to you and say, Pastor Steve, 20 years ago, I was in your children's ministry program, and the seeds that were planted make all the difference in my life. He said, if that happens to you once in your life, grab it and make it for what it's worth. But you probably are never going to hear that. So he said, you're not going to know whether or not what you're pouring yourself into is actually going to make a difference. And he said, even if the kids do that, he said, you're not likely going to stay in it very long. Most associate pastors in certain roles early in their ministry career don't stay there for long. So he said, you're probably going to move on to something else. He said, you're not going to know. But this was my heart and my passion right from the start. How do we as the church imagine faith effectively taking hold in the generation coming behind us? So that April meeting for me, it was a jab in my ribs for God to say, come on, man, I called you to this. And you've gone silent. And I got lazy. I know you've heard me say it before. I know I've pressed this button about the next generation and engaging them in the future of the church. I know I've said it, but I got lazy with it. And that meeting was a good opportunity for God to poke me in the ribs about it. And I thought he was done doing that until a couple weeks ago. We went to assembly. Go ahead to the next screen. We went to assembly. So our church is part of the MLHA, and the MLHA is one of the associations that's part of what's called the CBOQ, Canadian Baptists of Ontario, Quebec. And once a year, the CBOQ gathers together in Toronto at our annual assembly. Any guesses on what the theme was this year at assembly? The title was called Lead with Love, but the focus was on how to reach and keep the next generation. It's exactly, and the entire focus chapter has been focusing on this question for something like 40 years in his life of ministry. He's written a couple of really fantastic books about it. And he made this point, which I was not ready for. I think I knew it, but as soon as he said it, go ahead. He said, the next 30 years are going to be the most challenging for the church. And here's why. Since 2008, there was a report put out called Hemorrhaging Faith. How many of you have ever heard me use that term before and familiar with Hemorrhaging Faith before? Fellowship, Evangelical Fellowship of Canada, a bunch of different organizations got together and said, it looks as though we're losing young people out of the church. That's what our observation at the surface level looks like. Let's look into that and see if that's the case. And so they put together this huge study, and yes, they knew it. It was confirmed that at something like 60% plus, the church was losing the younger generation. When they reached 18 or so, they were leaving the church. What that means is, I'm just going to bring this home. I don't know how many kids were sitting here this morning, but give me this. Let's say we had 10 kids here this morning. What that faith report in 2008 told us is that 6 out of these 10 kids, by the time they hit 18, are going to walk away from the church. That's what the numbers were. That wasn't, I think maybe, that was they did the research and found out that kids who were growing up in the church at the rate of 6 out of 10 were leaving the church. And I have to be careful that I don't start yelling at you. I can't deal with that. Point is, the next 30 years are going to be hard because, A, we've been losing. We have been losing the next generation. We get caught up in having conversations that are not the point, and in the meanwhile, another one goes out the door. Another one goes out the door. And if I said to you, you can pick any 6 you want of these 10 kids, but only 4 of them get to stay. Come on, that's ridiculous. You're not going to do it, right? I'm not going to do it. If I said to you, Satan's reaching into your homes and he's taking your kids, what would you do after the first one was gone? You would change something, wouldn't you? You'd figure out how he got in and you'd change the locks. So we've been losing, said Chap Clark. And we're aware of it, and we've been aware of it now for over a decade. We have been aware of it by the data that came into our hands for over a decade, that we were losing the next generation. He said, the second challenge is this. There's a rise of the group called the nuns, not N-U-N-S, N-O-N-E-S. And the nuns are kids who have no faith background. So we have the kids in our midst in our church right now who have a faith background, i.e. they're here, and their parents brought them, okay? But behind them is coming a generation of kids, 6 out of 10, who've left the church. And when they have kids, their kids have no faith background. So we're not even able to rely on what they grew up with. They didn't grow up with it. That's the next generation of the culture outside. It's not kids that we can go back to and remind them what they're familiar with. They've never heard it to begin with. That makes it even more challenging for the church, for them. And he said the third one is this. In this culture, this is thanks very much to social media and to technology, we're raising a generation who are isolated and they're hurting. And it's not a slam on technology. Please, it's not your phone's fault. It's not your computer's fault. It's just, let's get our heads around, this is the context we're in. Kids are raised in isolation now because they do most things interactively with the screen, not so much one-to-one. And so these things make it even more complicated for us. He made the point that this is why it's more complicated. There's a deep need. His point was, when he made these points, that currently the model of church we have doesn't easily and quickly address those issues. The model probably has to change. And he made this point. There's a deep need for inclusion and invitation, and I'm going to share with you, I think in the entire week that was there from Wednesday through the Saturday, and this is the one statement that I almost lost my breath when he said it. But I need to share this with you, because this means something for us as a body. He said this: it is not the responsibility of the next generation to find their way in. It is the responsibility, he said, there's a group in the church called the dominants, and if you're 40 and over, that's you. If you're 40 and over and you've been raised in the church, that's you, okay? You are the dominant. We are the dominant crowd. How many of us in this room are 40 and over? Okay, keep your hands up really high. 40 and over, that's the majority of us, yes? And keep your hand up if you're 40, if you can. If you're 40 and over, if you're 40 and over and you were raised in the church, do you see that we dominate this space? If you're 40 and over and you've been raised in the church, we are the dominant. Okay? Just by sheer number. We rule, do we not? Herman, you have a question. Okay. We are the dominant. Sorry, you can put it down now. Appreciate that. And this is what he said about the dominants. Go ahead. It is the responsibility of the dominant to initiate relationship and make a place at the table. I have nothing to add to that. It is the responsibility of the dominant to initiate relationship and make a place at the table. If I went last week to hear nothing else, I heard that, and it caught me off guard because I already knew that, but I got lazy. I'm confessing to you this morning that as your pastor, I got lazy about this. Because, here's why. Here's why I think I've dropped the ball on this. It's a moment of honesty. You don't want me telling you this over and over and over again, right? You don't want me coming with you and saying, you know, Florence, it's not about you. It's about the next generation. And then going to the next person and saying the same thing over and over and over again. After a little while, I'm not asking you to go ahead and yell out your confess, but I know you get tired of that. You get tired of hearing that. I get tired of saying it. And I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the guy that's continually pounding this and pounding this and pounding this, because I would stop listening after a while if I were you. If I just keep telling you that our focus ought to be, how are we going to hand off us and what we do to the next generation? If that's the only thing I ever said, at some point you just get tired of hearing it. And I don't want to be that guy. I wanted to be the guy that says and does the things that everybody loves. It's self-preservation. So I've been trying to play this game for the last few months where I say the right thing and nuance the right thing so that everybody's happy with me. And all the while I've known, this is hanging in the air. This is hanging in the air, that we have a responsibility as the dominant to get a hold of the next generation and draw them in and make sure that they know their love and make sure that they know their value and let them know that we intend on handing this off to you. I've heard a number of people say, I've served in the church. I'm done. And you're not. If you're breathing, you're not done. If you're breathing, you're not done. And if we are able to find a way to build the relationships that we mentor the next generation and invest in them and let them talk to us, Chap Clark said, one of the worst phrases that we have been repeating now for years, invest, invest, invest in the next generation. Invest, invest, invest. And he said, what we got telling ourselves was, our voice is the only one that matters. Teach them, instruct them, tell them, blah, blah. And he said, we didn't stop and listen. What are they saying? He said, can you create an environment in your church where you learn how to listen to young people, to their obscure, silly ideas and go, wait a second, let me hear that again? What are you getting at? So learn how to talk to them. So Chap Clark at Assembly, I was challenged all over again. It's the Dominus Responsibility. He talked about, again, the environment, and he used the exact same words. Is it welcoming, engaging, and empowering? The keychain power, like, are we handing off leadership for our ministries to the next generation? Anyway, I'm not going to go through all the points that he made. And so after April, the MLHA, where God said, come on, Steve, don't let this thing go. And then 2 weeks ago, I got the poke in the ribs again. And I walked over there thinking, holy cow, they ever dropped the ball. I thought I was done. So last Sunday when Pastor Darrell preached, I went over to New Life with my family. And I thought, this is going to be great. I'm going to go to a church this morning, and I'm just going to sit, and I'm going to hear, and I'm going to soak it in. I'm going to be anonymous. This year, I'm just going to take some time off. Nope. Nope. Did not get any time off. I wasn't on the platform. Most of the people in the room didn't even know I was there. That was cool. But God did not give me the Sunday off. Because here's what happened. Pastor at New Life last week, he got up, and he talked about the church doing what it's doing, and he applauded their church for the things that are active in their community and what's happening there, and their facilities are working. They've got great programs. And he openly said, and he's right about this, he said, you know, in the town of Petrolia, we're the happening thing. New Life is the happening church, and he's right. In terms of Petrolia and the ministries they run, they're right on. He said, we are completely acceptable. With what we're doing, the ministries, and he talked about, he said, we're there. We've made it. We are acceptable. And then he started to push this button, which basically asks this question. When did acceptable become the target? We're right there. And since when was that good enough? And I started to think, I got to get out of the room. I don't want to hear this. Acceptable is not the target. I have this deep-rooted passion and this conviction that drives the majority of what I do as a lead pastor. Fleshing out my sermons and working with the deacons and interaction with the committees. I have this deep-rooted passion that we as the church, with excellence, with the bar set really high, would seek to achieve the things that we do with absolute excellence. And it gets me in trouble every once in a while. Last Sunday, I stepped into a meeting I probably shouldn't have gone to. And I made the point, excellence. I want us to answer the questions. I want us to be thinking critically. I don't want to settle for this. I don't want to settle for okay. I want to work harder to get the, and I did a lousy job of it. Ended up, there was a phone call later that day. I had to make an apology, and rightfully so. Because this passion to drive us to do everything that we do with excellence, I sometimes let it instead be voiced in frustration. So as I close here this morning, go back to Colossians chapter 3 with me. Open your Bibles, please, Colossians chapter 3. I'm almost done. I'm going to wrap up real quick here. I want to share this with you. Paul's writing this letter to the church in Colossae, and he's basically talking about life in general, the things that you do Monday to Friday. This isn't specifically about church gatherings at worship time, but he speaks to the church as a body, and I want you to hear what he says, because he says it better than I'm ever going to say it. Listen to this. I'm going to start at verse 12. Chapter 3, verse 12 of Colossians. Therefore always means there's been an argument made up to this point. He's built a case. He's had some logical things put together. And he says, therefore, since you are God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourselves with... Now listen to these words, okay? Chap Clark and Dave Overholt said, in order to reach and keep the next generation, and these are guys who have been studying this for 40 years, he said, you got to show them you're friendly, you got to show them you're loving, you got to show them compassion, you got to show them that they matter. Listen to what Colossians says. Clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and what's the word? Patience. Well, at least we know that doesn't have anything to do with working with kids, right? You've got to be relentlessly patient with the next generation. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you have. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. Over all these things, put on love, which binds them together in perfect unity. Quick side note, love, throughout the New Testament, is a word about sacrificing. If you love somebody, you don't need to tell them, they'll see it, they'll feel it, because you have sacrificed of yourself so that they experience that. Let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, and since as members of one body you were called to peace, be thankful for the word of Christ, while we richly teach and admonish one another with all wisdom as you sing hymns and psalms and spiritual songs. Gratitude in your hearts. Sorry, I'm rushing to get to verse 17, which says, and whatever you do, church, acceptable is good enough. Anyone? That's not your translation? Sorry, I'm reading the NIV. Maybe you've got something different. It does not say that acceptable is good enough. It does not say that. It says, and whatever you do, whether in word or deed, whatever governance model you write, whatever plans you have for ministry, whatever you do as a body together, the you in this is plural. Whatever you do, do it in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Jump down a little bit further, and he talks about slaves and masters. Verse 23, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as for working for the Lord, not for men. Is the bar for us as a church, as we operate together, is it here or is it here? It's out of our reach. The bar is excellence and perfection in everything we do, and that's always what we reach for, and we rarely ever, ever get a hold of it, but that's the bar. That's the standard. That's so that we can say as a church, 20 years from now, we have given everything we could to hold on to the next generation. We fought tooth and nail to hold on to the next generation. I'm going to throw this up here, and this is my challenge. And it is open for debate. You may come to me and say, I completely disagree, but this is what I think. That 10 years from now, this church will be led by the youth in our midst, the kids who were sitting right here, the kids who are in the room with us. If you're under 30, I'm talking about you. 10 years from now, this church should be led by those people and people we haven't even met yet. Because the purpose of the church was what again? Ultimately, our goal is to glorify God by seeing people come to faith in Jesus Christ. And that's talking about people who aren't in the room with us yet. So the reason we exist, we stopped to pause this morning to think about this. Our goal is to see people who are not yet Christians be leaders in this church in the next 10 years. That's a big, audacious, ridiculous goal. God seems to do ridiculous, doesn't he? Has God accomplished more on behalf of this church than what the people in this church imagined he would? Yes, he has. You've told me the stories many times, right? In the building of this building, God did something way beyond what you expected he was going to do. And that's what I think God's going to do. In the next generation, he's going to do more than you and I are currently thinking of. I need your help with something. I need you as a church to hold my feet to the fire about this. Because I got lazy. And I tried to be everybody's friend and just say the right things. But he put on my heart 12 years ago the passion to have the next generation take it and take it from us and continue it. And I'm going to need this congregation to poke me in the ribs every once in a while to say, come on, don't you let that passion go. Will you do that for me? Will you stay on top of that? Because I will not see six of these kids go. And I think you feel the same way. I'm pretty convinced of that. There's this whole 6 out of 10 number, 60%, 50%, 40%. I'm not good with it. As far as I'm concerned, everything is up for grabs so long as it keeps them with us and we perpetually see people come to Christ and grow in that faith. Could I have the worship team come on up here and help us this morning to respond? Come on, follow me, I'll make you fishers of men. They don't have any idea what that means, but they follow it anyway. And so my challenge in that sermon was, if you follow after Christ, I don't know what he's going to do with you, but I guarantee you this, things are going to change. He's going to change something in your world. That was the point of the sermon, but it's kind of a risky sermon for a pastor preaching for the call, right? Things are going to change. That was not my intent at the time, but I've been here 5 years now, and I'm telling you this, things are going to change. That's not a threat. It's not a threat. I'm not unhappy. I'm not trying to attack the church. I'm telling you, none of us here are comfortable with losing 6 out of 10, right? So we're going to figure out what it's going to take. And if we have to tweak a program, we have to change something, maybe some of us are saying, you know what? I have to be more proactive about approaching some of the young people in this church. Cool. Don't let that go. Yeah, he's right. I'm going to go up to one of the summer interns and say, hey, by the way, we're glad you're here this year. Whatever it takes. Let's do that. Let's make that commitment together. And whether or not I'm right about this 10-year thing, it's not the point. But let us know that we're going to fight hard to carry the next generation along with us. And then we're going to listen for them as they tell us what's next. Would you stand with us this morning, please, as we respond?